Hi, I'm Heather Mulder.
And I'm Janice Greeno, and you're listening to Dementia Untangled, where we explore the topic of dementia through conversations with physicians, experts, and community leaders.
Our discussions focus on innovative ideas, practical strategies, and proven methods to guide caregivers along a supportive path.
Hello and welcome to Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of our podcast.
Today, our conversation will be with Dr. Matt Malone, who is a geriatric psychiatrist, a former medical director of hospice, and a palliative care physician. He currently is a dementia specialist at Banner Alzheimer's Institute. And we will be discussing palliative care in dementia. And Janice, I'm looking forward to this discussion because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding around palliative care, but it really hits a lot of the buzzwords that are going around in aging and dementia right now. Things like aging in place and aging at home, person-centered care and integrated health care, as well as quality of life. Palliative care really encompasses all of these. And, you know, dementia is such a complicated condition. It goes beyond physical symptoms. There are psychological symptoms and emotional symptoms that accompany the progression of the disease. It's not just a disease of the individual. It affects the people who care about this person. It affects their entire family. It really requires a team approach. According to the World Health Organization, palliative care prevents or relieves suffering, whether physical, emotional, or psychological.
You know, Heather, I am so glad that we're talking about palliative care today. I think it is a topic that a lot of people have confusion around, and they might not even have ever heard the word palliative care. And one of the benefits that I read about on the World Health Organization website as well is that early delivery of palliative care reduces unnecessary hospital admissions and the use of health services. And I've heard it also called a comfort approach to care.
How powerful, Janice. I mean, avoiding hospitalizations, we know how difficult that can be on the person with dementia. And so if there's a service that can help us reduce the number of hospital admissions and reduce the use of health services. I'm so excited to learn more about it.
Absolutely.
Welcome, Dr. Malone. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. It's nice to be here.
Before we learn a little bit more about palliative care, I would like to learn a little bit more about you. Can you tell us what led you to connect to the dementia community?
Well, I think my story, like everybody's, is kind of a blend of your interests and your experiences and the people you meet along the way. And with that, I've been very fortunate. I've always had an interest in the science and the brain and psychology, even before going to medical school. But some of the twist into palliative care came during my internship in internal medicine, when we were really heavily focused on palliative care, and it was a weekly lecture series. And then, as things would have it, when I went on to do my psychiatry residency, my mentor was a geriatric psychiatrist who he himself was a hospice medical director. So I went on to do hospice all the way through my psychiatric residency, and became a requirement when I pursued my geriatric psych fellowship. I was able to continue working with a hospice in Connecticut, and I was able to go on and get board certified. So I've kept both of those aspects, the psychiatry and geriatric psychiatry and the hospice and palliative care, a part of my career ever since. And I've continually tried to find ways to bring them together.
Well, we're definitely talking to the right person today. Can we start just with a basic definition? What is palliative care?
I think it's a great question. And really, for me, when we look at it, it really comes back to the term palliative, which really means to alleviate symptoms without being able to cure the underlying disease or the cause of those symptoms. And I think what we notice a lot of what happens now is that these terms, palliative care, hospice care, all get blended together and jumbled. And what we lose perspective on is that palliative care isn't just for life-limiting illness, but something that can be a part of a disease process.
So when you talk about palliative care and you talk about hospice in the same sentence, And you say that they're not different. So often they get blended together. Could you just untangle that for us and tell us what is the difference between palliative care and hospice?
Well, I think where we start, obviously, is whenever we come up with a diagnosis that we can't cure. And in our case, what we're dealing with is dementia. You know, it's something we have goals and hopes to find the cure for sooner than later. But until we do, we have to work with managing these diseases. So early on from the diagnosis of a disease that we can't cure, we want to look at how can we support somebody? How do we care for their physical, their emotional, their spiritual, their social needs all along the way? And as their life changes through the course of these diseases, then as the disease progresses and the diseases become more advanced, as we get closer to the end of life, when it's reasonably likely that somebody's prognosis is 6 months or less, that's where you implement the Medicare benefit of the hospice benefit. The hospice care really is focused on end-of-life care and management at the terminal phase of an illness. And palliative care is really looking at supporting and alleviating symptoms through the course of a disease. So one will often lead into the other, although they're not mutually exclusive, but hospice care is really focused on the end of life. Palliative care is focused throughout the disease course.
When I think of something as complicated as the dementias are, as Alzheimer's disease is, it seems like palliative care is just the perfect fit. I know the average lifespan of someone who has Alzheimer's disease is about 8 years. And you talk about the importance of introducing that comfort care early on. How does palliative care help someone with dementia?
Yeah, I think really what we're trying to do initially is the support we can offer begins from the diagnosis to education and supporting that person socially and supporting their families. We want to help them understand what they're dealing with. And from there, what the course of the illness is like, and we can begin to start to anticipate what changes may be ahead. I know you've had other people on some of the Dementia Entangled podcast talking about advanced care planning. And I think really what we start to do is we start to define what are our goals, what are the things that we hope for, what are the things that we fear will occur with these diseases. And then we can begin talking about how do we promote that? How do we support somebody? How do we support their family? May it be more education? Maybe they'll need caregiver support. We start to plan for those changes in their lives. And then along the way, we have to start preparing to also deal with the grief and loss, because that often goes unnoticed in these diseases. It's not just the loss of one's functional capacities in their physical and cognitive health, but people lose their hope for their expectations. They lose their role in their life. And it's reframing their life and their perspectives. And I think having those discussions can help them feel productive, even though they're facing a life-limiting illness.
Dr. Malone, finding help like that almost sounds too good to be true.
You're right. And I think what we're finding is how do we bring these services increasingly to the families who are dealing with dementia? What we know we've always had is, you know, these type of cares and supports to illnesses that have a more rapid trajectory toward death. We all know what to expect in advanced cancer and the end of life care for malignant diseases. What we're finding with dementia care is that we need to adapt our services and change our resources to be prepared to have a long-term engagement, like you said, through these years-long support and disease trajectories. So here at Banner Alzheimer's Institute, our family and community service teams are really getting involved in helping to be present and walk through this journey with our families. But I think what you're finding also is that increasingly hospice organizations, home healthcare agencies, you know, we're finding other groups start to adapt their services and provide these to patients and families earlier. And what we're hoping is to make connections and see these programs build over the future, because it's really a necessary resource to help guide people through this journey.
I wonder, do you have like a specific example that you could share with our listeners of what palliative care looked like for a person with a disease, for their support system?
So I think one of the biggest things that we find is the role of palliative care has different meanings at different stages. And so more than just any one example, I think it's kind of an amalgamation of many examples. So often what we're doing early in the course of the disease, starting with the diagnosis, is helping people kind of even understand what the term dementia means. And there, what subtype do they have, and starting to paint the picture of what the trajectory looks like. But I think here, palliative care might look like setting goals of care and getting that person's input and their perspective. What's important now is that if we know what their hopes are and what their wishes are, later on when the disease is more advanced and their decision-making capacity isn't as good or maybe no longer present, we can use that to help us as families and as caregivers and as providers make decisions that represent their wishes as much as possible and as true as possible to what they would want at this point in their life. I think one of the things that we see in more advanced disease then is it's helping guide people and giving them support and education about what's to come. Sometimes that's talking about the risks and benefits of interventions, which I think is an essence to what a good palliative care and hospice care requires. And there are often examples of things that are not discussed. You know, we talk about end of life care needing artificial nutrition or hydration, but we don't always talk about what the risk is of those interventions. What's the risk or the complication of putting in a PEG tube in somebody with advanced dementia? Do these interventions actually promote quality of life? What we know is some of the discussions in those examples are that we don't prevent hospitalization. We don't prevent aspiration pneumonia. We don't prevent skin breakdown. Even though we're doing these things in effort to try to help them, you know, oftentimes they aren't beneficial. So educating people and helping them make the decisions with as much information as possible are really kind of components of what we might see later in the course of illness.
I think that education is so important, and I love how you are providing that education for us right now and for our listeners right now. And I wonder if you can share with us, you know, what are some of the symptoms that might be alleviated through palliative care for someone who's living with dementia, and how might that relieve stress for them and for their caregivers and families?
One of the things that we find is that when that balance in a relationship shifts, when one person becomes more of the caregiver and the other person becomes more dependent, that there's a lot of exhaustion, burnout. And if we can intervene early and be prepared and reduce that caregiver distress, not only can we help that family dynamic, maybe we can help somebody promote their wish of staying at home longer. But one of the unforeseen consequences to this is often the increased mortality and morbidity, the decline in the health of the caregiver. And if we can provide support to them and help them carry on longer in that role, we're helping both people in that scenario. And I think that becomes a part of trying to intervene both from the family and the social perspective. Additionally, we have other interventions too. Some of the physical interventions might be looking for signs of distress. We know that pain in advanced dementia is very prominent. 70-90% of nursing home patients will have pain when they're in a nursing home for dementia. And so sometimes it might be a palliative care team might educate a nursing staff about looking for nonverbal signs of pain or distress. We might learn to recognize that a behavior or a grimace or a pulling away, even in somebody who can't make vocal responses, might be an indication of distress or discomfort, and we can help guide that and promote a better outcome for those individuals. Otherwise, other symptoms that you might see treated, infections are very common. And what often happens is as we get to more advanced stages or near an end of life, when people are completely dependent of care, they may not be able to care for themselves, feed themselves, bathe, groom, provide any hygiene. Their risk of having a pneumonia or aspiration of some of their gastric content is quite high. And what we have to decide is, do we always keep using antibiotics to treat those pneumonias? Or when they're not responding, or if the goal of care is no longer trying to treat all of these symptoms of the underlying illness, maybe the shift will be no longer trying to treat the infections with antibiotics, but maybe treating the shortness of breath with an opioid or something to alleviate that distress, knowing that we're no longer able to cure the dementia and we can no longer prevent the consequences of the dementia, such as when somebody's getting aspiration pneumonia.
I know palliative care is called comfort care. And as I'm listening to you talk, I just keep thinking, this just sounds so comforting. To have someone who is available, who, while they can't tell you exactly what's going to happen and when it's going to happen, they have knowledge in it and they have a background in it and they can walk along this journey with you.
I think it's, you know, obviously one of our goals, and when we're going from diagnosis all the way through death, it's hard because these are diseases that rob the individual of their identity, of who they are as a person. And I think what happens is people view individuals who are dying from dementia as having already died. They've had this quote unquote social death. And I think what we fail to recognize is that they're still people and that they can still have some interactions, even though they may not be to the degree they once had them. And so as we look at them as a person and try to judge how they're responding and start to anticipate what they may need, you know, are they constipated? Are they thirsty? Is there something that we aren't addressing? We can still try to alleviate and comfort them, even if they can no longer tell us. And I think that that becomes a very common approach to somebody who's at the end of life in hospice care. It's just harder to recognize it when somebody's been labeled or diagnosed with a dementia.
And I think that this approach helps the caregivers and the families so much as they are going through this process. To have someone like Heather, you had mentioned, it's almost like you're getting not a tour guide, but somebody who's been down the trail before and somebody who knows what works best in different situations and what might help the family with different barriers or different goals that they have. And Dr. Malone, I love that you talked about shared goals of care. And I wondered if you could just talk about that a little bit more. What might be a couple more of those shared goals of care?
It's a great question. And so how I think of that a lot of times is as you get to know somebody and the earlier we can intervene, the more we can understand what's important to them. And so by honoring their wishes and identifying what's important to them, that becomes the guiding principle. When we're doing a lot of hospice care, what you'll find is that we may have a goal of alleviating pain. And that might come at a consequence, an unintended consequence of hastening their death, because in trying to alleviate their pain, we may inhibit their breathing. But I think if we know what's important to them, we know what our first priority is, and we will pursue that even if the second and third priorities can't be maintained. And then we can guide the family and help everybody stay together. The goal is to try to make a cohesive plan as long as possible. And knowing that if we can't get to that first goal, then what's the next important thing to prioritize and promote for comfort? That model also works earlier on, you know, whether it be from making decisions as to how long do we stay at home to when do I give up driving? You know, all these decisions along the way are in essence palliative. There are the consequence of a disease that none of us choose, but yet we all have to respond and make the best decision we can, which we often call the least worst decision, because we want to do as well as we can for their benefit and the safety of others. And we don't want to trump anybody's autonomy, but sometimes we want to balance that against the risks versus benefits of the alternate decision.
Dr. Malone, it sounds like, especially for something like a dementia that we know is going to progress and this person isn't going to be able to say, these are my needs and this is the way I want things to go at a certain point, it seems like palliative care should be initiated almost as soon as they receive a diagnosis. When do you recommend they call in palliative care?
Yeah, I think that is a very individual choice. And part of it becomes making sure that everyone recognizes that this doesn't just mean that it's an end-of-life care plan, because I think that's such a natural assumption whenever you're talking to anybody. So maybe what we, you know, our first steps might be in dealing with the emotional consequences of this diagnosis or anticipating changes. So again, we can start a lot of the interventions we're making under the palliative umbrella earlier, but they don't have to be specifically called palliative care. We might have our social worker work on goals of care and advanced care planning. We're starting to set the stage for what to anticipate in the future. When things become more difficult, or when one party, a caregiver or the patient, are starting to struggle or have more symptoms, I think then the next phase of this palliative care model might come in, and where we start looking at the risks and benefits of our treatments. And so I think it's a process that can be implemented at any given point. But what we want and what we know is that the sooner we start having these conversations, the more prepared we can be and the more we can honor somebody's wish. And like you said in the beginning, this can change outcomes. The sooner we have our goals of care and the sooner we can get somebody's input, we know that they may lose that ability to make that wish later on. We may be able to help facilitate somebody to die at home, whereas otherwise they may have been hospitalized at the end of their life. So we can make decisions and anticipate those things to help promote their wish without having to react in an emergent scenario. So I think the goal is earlier is better, but it doesn't have to be all under the term palliative care to begin.
That's so interesting. And it sounds to me like some of the things that we're already seeing in healthcare are palliative care, but they're just not called that. And I think it's so good that this is a formal approach, though, that's promoting comfort and reducing burden. And if somebody is at that point in their life where they're going, you know, I think we need this in our family. I think my person and I as a caregiver, we would really benefit from having palliative care. How might one go about finding palliative care?
I think always we want to begin, include our primary care providers. I think starting there to understand where we're at. And sometimes it can be educational to keep both our primary care team and our patients together. They might have resources in the community. Often we're seeing more and more hospice organizations expand into the communities and build palliative care teams. The other part is just looking through our insurance companies. Medicare and Medicaid provide palliative care services. It might be calling our insurance providers to see what resources we have in our network. I think the other thing to look at just in our local communities, you know, I know here in Tucson, our local hospice organizations have done a lot of work with dementia care. We've seen that in Phoenix as well, but we might want to reach out to them, a nursing facility who maybe could provide some respite care, and or reaching out to social workers at both on nursing homes or, you know, for our patients here, our staff with our family and community services team become a resource.
I think that's amazing to hear. Contact Medicaid, contact Medicare, because as I'm learning more about palliative care and the incredible breadth of support that it can offer to people living with dementia, I tend to be a little bit more skeptical. And my first thought was, well, how are people going to be able to afford this? So it's so comforting to know that people can just contact their insurance policy, contact Medicare or Medicaid to find a local service and look into potential payment options for that. I wonder if you could talk to me a little bit more about this sort of person-centered care approach that happens with palliative care, and really that defining hopes and defining fears and kind of striking that balance between the person with dementia and those who care for them.
Yeah, I think it's really an easy way to start having conversations both with our loved ones and in our families. It's always easy to kind of identify somebody as being ill and then in turn not expecting them to have input into the scenarios we're dealing with. But when we start to talk about what we hope for in person-centered care, it allows us to talk about what our goals are. And sometimes they may be realistic and they may not be, but it allows us to have a conversation without being judged. And I think one of the hardest parts to have these difficult conversations is to try to express what I want and then come to the point where I can understand that maybe what I'm hoping for isn't possible. But then can I minimize my fears? And I think those two words kind of set the parameters to have a conversation that everybody can share. It's often the set of terms I'll use when I'm conducting family meetings is asking each individual, what do they hope for? What do they fear? And now we can have a conversation about how do we take into account where everybody's at? You know, one of the things that we find in families is they all bring different experiences. They have different knowledge. They have different beliefs. And to come together with a shared goal of care can be difficult, but as we start to understand why they have that hope or why they have a certain fear based on those experiences and knowledge, we can then try to bring everybody together as much as possible, knowing that we're still, in the end, trying to promote the wishes of the individual who we're caring for. And so I think that keeps it more patient-centered, but also somewhat family-centered too. We're still trying to include those important aspects of their life as much as we can.
I love that family-centered as well approach. And I recently heard a caregiver share that when she had palliative care, not only did she feel supported, but that it was deeply calming for her family. And she felt like she had the highest quality of life that she could have had, and that she and her mother could have had.
You know, I think it's great to hear those type of outcomes happen. And what I think of when, you know, in person-centered care or even family-centered care, it really kind of touches on all those aspects, that when we start to not only focus just on the physical aspect of a disease, you know, in dementia, we're focusing on cognitive decline and functional status to define the illness. But when we start to look at them as a whole person and see them as a social person, and those dynamics and what makes them a social individual, and the emotional impact of these illnesses and the impact it's having on their families, we can start to alleviate a lot of that distress. And the other part too is the spiritual fears that come along with many people, and what impact it has, or, you know, what grief or unresolved grief do they have. As you start to identify these things and you can try to address them, you really provide a sense of calm. And then in the end, none of us get to avoid death, but it gives us kind of a structure or a framework of how to have these conversations, how to deal with death, and how to deal with it together, not be something we're fearful of or avoiding of. Or at least of all, trying to medicinalize, because often, what's the cause of our death we can't do, but we often get very focused on all the physical interventions, and we kind of miss caring for the person as a whole. So I think when we focus on all those aspects, it provides a lot of relief and probably helps generate the perspective that the individual you spoke to received from palliative care.
This has been such a fascinating and important conversation. I wonder if, before we close, you could give us your final thought.
I think most importantly is to recognize that we want to always maintain the care of the individual, and that doesn't always mean curing the disease, and that there are still options and alternatives that we can provide. Even if we can't solve every problem, at least we can be there to walk with them, to help them understand, help guide them forward, and help support their families along the way. And I think helping palliative care be seen under that light, instead of as a term that most people affiliate with death and dying, I think is an important distinction. And I hope that will resonate with people as they listen to this podcast.
Today, our conversation has been with Dr. Matt Malone, a geriatric psychiatrist and dementia specialist at Banner Alzheimer's Institute. Dr. Malone, we so appreciate you helping us untangle palliative care in dementia.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you, and it's nice to talk to you today.
Yes, thank you so much, Dr. Malone. It was such a pleasure to talk to you today, and we just appreciate you being with us.
Great. Glad to be here, and look forward to talking to you again.
Hey, and thank you, Heather, for another fantastic conversation. And Amber, thank you for all you do behind the scenes to make this podcast work so well. And we want to thank you to our exceptional, wonderful listeners for joining us. And if you haven't already, please subscribe and share this podcast. I'm looking forward to our next conversation on Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Dementia Untangled. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dementia Untangled is hosted by Heather Mulder and Janice Greeno, produced and edited by Amber Ayers, and is brought to you by Banner Alzheimer's Institute and Banner Sun Health Research Institute. We are supported by generous donations to the Banner Alzheimer's Foundation.
Please visit our website at banneralz.org and follow us on Facebook to learn about upcoming events. If you have questions or comments, please email us at dementiauntangled@bannerhealth.com.